here we are. Welcome back to Karma is a Pod for the second half of our Tortured Poets Department reaction.
Discussion.
Okay. We are joined this time by Ramal. You were much missed in our last episode.
I know. Yeah. Fundamental missing piece of the puzzle.
Ramal's live reactions would have been really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Next time, we won't let that one slip away.
No.
Right.
Cool. So, you guys doing good?
You know, feeling a little tortured.
Yeah.
But, you know, said it last week, but I'm not as traumatized as I was, you know, maybe by the playlists somehow.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Right. Okay. Because I was, like, messed up, you know? I, like, feel like the whole weekend I was just, like, playing I Can Do It With a Broken Heart over and over again and, like, crying, walking around the city. And I was
that
like,
sounds kind of a bop.
Yes, it's such a bop, but I was also, like, crying because it's, like, a depressing bop, you know? And I was like, wow, this is really emblematic of what this album has done to me. Like, my psyche has been torn apart, but in a good way, you know? In a way I appreciate.
Nobody does a depressing bop like our girl T.
Yes, yes.
Ramal, you want to get it started?
Sure. So what I wanted to talk about, which is pretty much the main thing of, like, the album, was what everyone's favorite songs were. So I know Annie already spoiled it and told me, but she can say it again. I wanted to hear from both of you guys what your top two songs from the album are, like, as we currently stand.
I think my top two from my initial listens are The Tortured Poets Department, The Song, mm-hmm. and Down Bad, which I cannot get the chorus out of my head. I'm obsessed with it.
Okay. Awesome. Love that.
I like But Daddy, I Love Him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I like I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Good picks. Okay. Yes. I like both of those choices. I also like, because you picked kind of like two of the more like buoyant songs, at least like sonically. That's really interesting. So what I guess I wanted to talk about more generally before launching into like two specific tracks that I picked out for today was just that I think this album was so fascinating, especially with the 31 songs, because you kind of get into all of like the nooks and crannies of what she's done before. And I think it was really interesting to see people draw parallels back to like her previous sound and previous albums, because this is kind of like an amalgamation of all of that. Like, we've got the depressing bops, we've got like the folklorian, Evermorian type stuff, and then we've got like some sort of vague red sounding stuff. And it's a really interesting like way that she stitched it all together. And I think she stitched it together really successfully. I also agree that this is an album that you have to like sit with, in my opinion, like, and listen to fully multiple times before certain things start to click into place. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, I picked the two tracks that I was like, we have to discuss it. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, and then also But Daddy, I Love Him. So to start, I'll like give my piece on The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. I think that is like literally my favorite track on the album right now. I've listened to it 2,000 times. I think the bridge is one of the best she's ever done, and it's so perfect with the piano. And I also think screaming, like, you deserve prison, but you won't get time, is kind of one of the best lines she's ever come up with. And I was curious what you guys thought of that song on your first listen versus now.
I think, thinking back to the reaction video, I remember getting to that song mm-hmm. and being like, okay, I hope that this is sort of the conclusion of the saga of the roller coaster mm-hmm. of a relationship that the whole album covers. And I think for me, it felt like one of her bitingest breakup songs ever. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's not as searing in the way of, you know, All Too Well. It's more of a mm-hmm. we are never ever getting back together sort of attitude towards it. But mm-hmm. it is just sort of a like a masterful, you know, mm-hmm. pen is mightier than the sword takedown mm-hmm. of
right.
the quality and character of this person, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll pick it back off what you said, because, you know, I think you, and people would see this if they saw the reaction, you sort of laid the seeds that this was a story arc, and I was definitely convinced by that song. That mm-hmm. song was like, okay, this is, you know, there's an arc, this is, because that's the second to last song, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, right?
No, third to
no,
last.
No, third to last. But it's the end.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. like third the end. Last, there's yeah. one more, but there's one more in the arc, and then it goes to Clara Bow, which is kind of unrelated.
The alchemy
is... Yes, that's... Yeah,
so
okay.
You would say that's still part of the arc. Or you would say that's the beginning of a new arc.
That's a question for another time. I think that either way, whether it's second to last or third to last, it is a striking point at the end of the story.
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I fully agree. And I think something that I was thinking about with this song, which is, I just think that she is such an incredible storyteller, and I really think that this album is just, like, another example of that she sort of added to everything else she's done. Because it's like you can picture exactly what's going on inside the person's mind, almost like she's just unraveling those emotions for you. And, like, what really struck me about this song, specifically the bridge of, like, did you, wait, what was it? Okay, were you sent by someone who wanted me dead? Did you sleep with a gun underneath our bed? And the whole, like, sleeper cell spy and all of that. It was such an interesting capturing of how deeply trust can be broken, like to the point where you question whether anything was real ever, you know, and you start to question like everyone's motives. And I think it's such a great example of like how even when she's talking about a very specific experience, she captures these emotions that are so relatable, because she's still getting at this idea of like, what if you get to a point where you don't trust anything that you thought you knew in your bones before this, you know, like what if you get to that point where like nothing seems like it really was what you thought it was, and it like rips open your worldview. And I just really respected that. Like, that song is just a perfect encapsulation of it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of feeling like it's such a sharp contrast to some of the other songs, mm-hmm. but I feel like the seeds for that song are kind of laid a little earlier back when she starts, you know, sort of the scene where, you know, she, and I kind of see it as scenes because it feels like such a story, mm-hmm. the scene where she mm-hmm. goes to the bar and mm-hmm. he makes these revolting jokes, but she's still clinging on and defending right. it when mm-hmm. people are, you know, like
right.
showing pity towards her and right. concern right. that, you know, this is right. the man she's mm-hmm. dating, but sort of those seeds of she's right. starting to notice these things are mm-hmm. creeping in. Mm-hmm.
Right, like, I can fix it, no, really, I can, yeah. and then she's like, maybe I can't. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that actually leads us into the next song, because I think the reason I picked these two songs is that they're kind of, like, almost bookends of a story arc, I feel like, at least, like, a very important part of the story arc, and they kind of have, like, these very opposing perspectives. So, But Daddy, I Love Him, I will say, again, like I said, I think I was in shock the first time I listened to the album, so I really needed to
think process. A lot of people were.
Yes, think a lot and of I needed were. To, like, listen to it, like, 20 times, but now it's genuinely one of my favorite songs, and I think it's just so yeah. perfect, and there are a lot of unique traits about it, like, I love all the country elements that she brought back into mm-hmm. it, and I think that helps so much with imagery, like, her, like, you're picturing mm-hmm. a character, like, running with her dress unbuttoned through the fields, and, like, desperately looking behind to see that they won't be caught. And it gave me very, like, thematically, it gave me the Romeo and Juliet vibes of Love Story in terms of, like, wow. what it's touching upon. Yeah. And then also Getaway Car. Because, you know, when she says that line, yeah, like,
totally.
Floor it through the fences, like, this idea of escape and just getting away together and, like, car, leaving yeah. the rest of the world behind. And I really liked just all of the elements of what she was saying. And I was curious, like, what you guys thought of that from your first listen to now, like, how you're sitting with it.
I like that comparison to Love Story a lot, because I think that there's a lot of intentionally juvenile elements to it, mm-hmm. you know, both in just the name, But Daddy, I Love Him, which sort of mm-hmm. sounds like that teenage petulance, like, but Daddy, I love right. him, you know, right. like right. this sort of, I think it also, you know, we were talking a little bit about this when we first listened. Mm-hmm. It that sort of country sound is a callback to her own youth and mm-hmm. and teenage era, and I think that's intentional yeah. to her kind mm-hmm. of recapturing that sort of attitude towards love and relationships right. that she had as a mm-hmm. teenager, and then right. later kind of regaining that more mature perspective on it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I agree. Right. And also, we were listening to it before this, and the vocal performance is really strong. The vocal performance is like vintage. Is like vintage yes. Taylor Swift. Yeah. It's like mm-hmm. an All Too Well type vocal right. performance. Like
yes,
you know, very strong, very mm. belty, very emotional. Mm-hmm. And that's. I mean, I picked it as one of my favorites too, and that's mm-hmm. the reason because yeah. I think that yeah. honestly, there are parts in the album where I wish I heard more of that. But mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the reasons I feel like people listen to Taylor Swift and pick all things like All Too Well as their favorite mm-hmm. song because of you know,
right, the intensity
of the vocal, right, the emotional, yes, intensity of the vocal.
Yes.
Very strong.
The emotional, yes. It's
vintage. Yes. Vintage.
it feels like Speak really Now. Mm-hmm. It does. It feels like Speak Now, yes, but it feels like Speak Now Taylor's version.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yes. Yes. I like that. Yes. Yeah. I like that. No, I really like that. And my final thoughts were just going to be on that track, because I had, mm-hmm, to say this, that, like, I think, and we can talk about this more, about obviously at a future date, but I really loved the bridge of the song. And, like, in terms of that intensity, like, I'll tell you something about my good name, it's mine alone to disgrace, and I'll tell you something right now, I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to all this bitching and moaning. I just thought that was such an interesting, like, across thematically with the album, I was kind of connecting to, like, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? Because something to reflect on with this album was definitely what she's talked about before of, like, feeling trapped in a fishbowl and, like, having every single one of her decisions evaluated to some extent. Like, anything she says, anything she does, anywhere she goes, there's going to be, like, a triumvirate making a moral judgment on it. And I think it was a really, like, her tapping into that emotion, I think, was an opportunity for people within the fandom or people who haven't previously, like, applied this empathetic perspective to try, even if you, like, have never experienced that yourself, to try and conceptualize, like, what it might feel like to have that, like, gaze or lens on you every single time you do anything and feeling like other people are controlling what you are and are not allowed to do. And I think this was a really interesting song to unpack that. And I look forward to our future convos about it.
Yeah, definitely.
We will talk about totally. It. That's for, yes, sure.
Totally. For sure. So switching gears a little bit from, you know, the music and lyrics, I wanted to talk a little bit about the aesthetic of Tortured Poets Department, from the photo shoots to the, mm-hmm, video to the sort of overarching theme, you know, of the era. And,
right,
obviously every era, especially, you know, during the Eras tour, kind of has an assigned color palette. And this is definitely one where the color palette was really strong. Obviously, when she announced the album at the Grammys, she was wearing black and white. Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody thought that that was a reference to Red TV being announced, and then it actually turned out to be, you know, a reference to Tortured Poets. The initial photos that were released, like the photo that ended up on the cover, were, you know, kind of in that color palette of black, white, gray, beige, you know, and the different editions sort of correlated to those colors as well. And it clearly brings to mind more of a folklore type of image than Midnight's. Mm-hmm. So I think I was initially surprised when I listened to the first half of the album, because I, mm-hmm, think based on the look, it, mm-hmm, was leaning more, I was expecting it to be more Folklore Evermore type sound, and it felt more, mm-hmm, like a Midnight's sort of continuation. Although then when the anthology dropped, I think that was much more acoustic, and, mm-hmm, it made more sense to me, I think, overall, mm-hmm, the choice of the aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, going back to that initial photo shoot and sort of the cover photos, mm-hmm, I think that the fact that she poses in lingerie and in sheets on the cover sort of makes a statement about, mm-hmm, how the album is sort of showing her at her most, you know, vulnerable, mm-hmm, and stripped back in a, right, way that I felt on first listen, mm-hmm, I'm not sure that she's ever done before, even though, you know, mm-hmm, she's built this career and this fan base on,
right,
emotionally connecting with people, but I feel like she's never been willing to expose the ugliest or least flattering parts of herself in this way before, and I feel like the photos kind of tied in into that idea. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. I was just, like, sort of chewing on what you just said, because I really liked just everything that you just said. It was, like, so interesting. Like, I think, yeah, like, what I liked about this album, and, like, specifically with the music video, was, like, this touching upon just these, like, snatches of emotions that are, like, really not quite easy to explain and can be, like, really confusing and contradictory and all of those things at once. And it's not really meant to make sense, which I think is a really interesting, like, she's not trying to build a story that she wants you to believe. She's just putting it all out there and leaving it for you to interpret however you will. But she's not, yeah, attempting to, like, create a specific storyline where she wants you to, like, take one specific thing away from it. She's just kind of, like, putting it all out on the table. And I think it is, like, a really fresh, different, new direction that she's gone in, which does feel more Midnight-y than it does, like, Folklore Evermore. And I really like it. Like, I think it adds to that sort of, like, relatability of, like, everyone, I think, has had those moments where you just feel like you're going absolutely crazy and, like, nothing makes, mm-hmm, sense. And it's interesting that she just decided to put that out on the page exactly in its format without, like, filtering or diluting it.
Yeah, I mean, sort of tying into that, speaking of the video and sort of the going crazy, you know, we see her at the beginning of the Fortnite video in an insane asylum, you know, and I think mm-hmm. she kind of has those themes throughout. You know, she compares her and the guy that she's singing about, you know, they're meant to be because they're both crazy. Everyone knows they're mm-hmm. crazy. There's also, we also see her brain being experimented on by men in mm-hmm. this sort of very classic horror inspired sort mm-hmm. of black and white Frankenstein Victorian, definitely some poor things elements, which was, I think, what I and a lot of people got when she first dropped the trailer for the music video. Right. And is also sort of interesting because we know she's good friends with Emma Stone, who's randomly credited on Florida for contributing oddities, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever that means. But I think that scene of her being experimented on by the men in the lab. And then we also hear the line in Down Bad where she says, you know, you brought me here just to be experimented on.
Interesting.
I feel like she is deliberately portraying herself as crazy and unreliable throughout the course of the album, and then kind of regains her sanity by the end and breaks out of that asylum. Right. I felt that was sort of an intentional aesthetic. And I also felt like maybe the nods to classic horror sort of served to show that, you know, this relationship was more of a horror story than a love story, at least was kind of how I interpreted that choice of visuals. I also thought it was kind of odd that, you know, it contrasts a lot with the scenes of her and Post Malone in the video, you know, kind of, and I guess I sort of interpreted them as flashbacks to, you know, the better days before she was in this asylum. But I was also surprised to see Post was playing the love interest in the video. Yeah. I didn't expect that. I would have more expected to see him cast as, like, Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, that would have been good. He would have been good at that.
Yeah, he would
have.
I thought he played the lover well, though. I think he did a good job.
He totally did. But it surprised me. It's not what I expected from the video.
I think the video was really good. I think it's probably one of her best of the ones she's directed to date. I think Post Malone looked great. I thought it was pretty funny when they were, like, acting like they were a couple, because that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. It was honestly, they were cute though.
They were cute.
It was cute.
I just feel like basically, like, no matter how you felt about the song or the album or whatever, everybody kind of came just being like, "Yeah, Post Malone's fucking awesome."
Yeah, I really enjoyed him in the video and in the feature. I felt like, you know, when she sort of wipes off her face and shows all of the tattoos that match Post Malone's, and he doesn't have the tattoos in the video. It was sort of her revealing her true self, but also maybe showing how this guy is still all over her underneath the surface. You know, it kind of reminds me of You All Over Me, which we did discuss two episodes ago as being a song we did not know when we saw it live.
We heard it at the Eras Tour.
At the Eras Tour. But yeah, just moving on to one more thing, sort of relating to the aesthetic of the album. I wanted to talk a little bit about the vinyl design, which... Yeah. I thought, honestly, I think this is, and we have it here, I think this is honestly maybe her best packaging from any of her albums. I love the matte design, but I think the really cool thing about it is the way that she glued the booklet with the lyrics to...
It's a book.
To the inside of the vinyl. So you open it up and you can page through it like a book. And it's a book. And sort of that ties into... the song, The Manuscript, which is obviously the bonus track on the main album. And I think that, you know, Taylor has always been a very lyric-forward artist, and I think packaging it in this way really makes it central to read those lyrics while you're listening, and I think that's really cool and unique, and I've never seen that before.
It feels super high quality.
It does.
It's really well done. It honestly kind of blew me away a little bit. Like, I'm like, this is really great. More people should be doing the booklet. Should be doing the booklet thing.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It honestly, you know, I love paging through the little books they usually include, but packaging it in this way just makes it, you know, almost like a given that you're going to read the lyrics when you're listening.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. No, it's great. I loved, I love the idea of, like, we're in the Torture Poets department, like, taking the class, and that's, like, our textbook that we get to bring.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And the photos throughout are just so gorgeous and well done.
I'm going to jump in with, like, one more point that I was going to make when you were talking about Fortnite. Please. But I was just going to say, in terms of thematic connections, something that I remember being confused about, but now I think it totally fits, is, like, the ending bridge that, like, trails off of, like, move to Florida, buy the car you want, but it won't start up till I touch you. I think that's so interesting with the parallel of, like, the Florida song and how she talks about, I think, in, like, that Amazon thing about how sometimes you feel the need to, like, escape your life and everything you've ever known and you end up in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I think given the themes of Fortnite, it's kind of like, when they're talking about that, it's like you feel the need to, like, upend your entire life and change everything, and you run away, but that person still clings to you, and life isn't the same without them, and you can't, like, just start living your life again because there's a memory of them, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Florida, at least, you know, in the U.S., is just, everybody knows, kind of a lawless, insane place.
Right?
Yeah. So, you know... I think it makes sense as a place you would go to have a mental breakdown.
She should write a song called Ohio.
A song called Ohio?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, she has a lot of songs that'll about her
brain,
small town.
That'll be in the Brain Rot
Maybe
version.
That's in Ohio. Who knows?
That'll be in Taylor's Brain Rot version. Okay, anyway. So, yeah, cool. Well, thanks for sharing all your opinions, guys. I had fun with that.
You sound so convincing, Zach. You
I'm
sound
glad.
Like you loved
it. Yeah, I'm really convinced.
Yeah, I'm convinced you just loved everything I just said. Totally. Yeah.
Wow. Some thought provoking things were just shared, and they're all percolating in Zach's head right now.
Well, okay. let's go back in time for a minute. Let's go back in time for a minute.
Okay.
Go back to 2022. A simpler time, one could argue. Before the Eras Tour, before Speak Now TV and 1989 TV, and before a certain tight end came along, and the return of the tabloid madness. Midnight's just released, 2022, and it's getting good reviews, because Midnight's got good reviews when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue maybe it's even held up better than my initial listen. And fans love it, but the non-fans don't really care. And it's like, it's calming, it's nice, it's a time of peace. Fast forward to now, and it seems like everyone under the sun has a bad case of Taylor Swift derangement syndrome. Oh. So, listen, first of all, the reviews came out pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the the biggest publications pretty much loved, like, they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, this is an instant classic. Taylor Swift, this is you at your best. Vogue, Rolling Stone, The Independent. And these were the first reviews coming out, so I think maybe, you know, you hear the reviews first, they impact your first listen. We were impacted on our first listen by some stuff that we had seen online, right?
Well, the reviews weren't out because we did listen right when it dropped at midnight. So.
Okay, so we were talking about speculation from leaks and stuff.
It was more speculation about what the album was going
to
be like.
Or from
we did not listen to leaks, by the way.
And we didn't listen to leaks.
No,
none of us listened to leaks.
No.
Yeah. Those were authentic viewing experiences.
Yes,
that you
yes,
saw.
Yes,
yes. I literally was like avoiding Twitter the whole day.
I think the response to this has been a lot more interesting and a lot more weird feeling than Midnight's did.
Very contentious, yeah.
Very contentious, very split, very split. It's almost giving... I don't want to... Maybe I should save this for the end, but I want to say it now, I guess. I'm almost thinking like Last Jedi levels of divisiveness with this album.
Right.
Torture Poets, you were much better than Last Jedi.
Hey, I like The Last Jedi.
Oh, no, I did like Last Jedi. Never mind, Last Jedi was good. Rise of Skywalker, you were not
really
good.
Bad.
Rise of Skywalker, you were
really
not
bad.
Good.
Okay.
Justice for Last Jedi.
Anyway, I'm just saying, Last Jedi, very divisive when to this day.
Yeah.
And
yeah, definitely. That's a good comparison.
I just feel like that's what we're what we're in for with this album. It's just so, I mean, Taylor's at a much bigger place now, and she's, you know, been in everyone's face for a year and a half or whatever, and people are definitely feeling it. I think a lot of people are definitely getting tired of it. People who aren't fans, people who aren't Swifties, you know, I can understand that. You know, it's major exposure. Now, not all of the reviews were great. There's this whole story with Paste Magazine, who released a review for Lover in 2019, and apparently it was a bad review. It was a pretty negative review, and there were death threats from people online because people on the internet are crazy. And this time around, when they reviewed the album, they didn't attribute a name to it. And they went in on the album. They did not like the album, but they decided that because of the death threats they got last time, that they weren't going to put a name to this piece. And then, honestly, if I read the album, it was a little tabloidy. Mm-hmm. It was a little
the review.
I read the Paste review with no attributed name. You know, it was a little tabloidy, a little bit, you know, scathing. But, you know, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. Ramal, you said you heard about this story, so do you have thoughts on this?
I do have a lot of thoughts because I actually talked with someone else about that review, and specifically, like, we were talking about the opening line of it, which I think is something like Sylvia Plath didn't stick her head in an oven for this, and, like, that just being a very not super appropriate line to use, especially because we were talking about how I think her living child or someone, like, within her family has, like, talked about that or asked people to be more respectful around the circumstances of her death. And yeah, that was a very, like, that was a line that was meant to provoke, that was meant to shock, and didn't feel super appropriate in the context of the album, especially because I've actually read, like, one of Sylvia Plath's, like, The Bell Jar, and I think, I think that whatever his point was, which is probably that Taylor Swift can't accurately capture, like, depression or the feeling of mania, I don't think landed very well, because I personally feel like the album did do a really good job, like, capturing the elements of what that feels like. And then also, the other thing I was going to say is I do feel like art is very subjective. There are people who are going to love things, there are people who are going to hate things. But I do feel like the people that come in with the most scathing reviews pretty much were always going to do that, regardless of what the album says. Like, yeah. I remember the day before the album dropped of, like, unfortunately, it seemed like a lot of people who were not within the fandom getting a hold of the album and, like, discussing it and all of that. And I was like, oh my God, like, here we go again. A whole day of, like, trying to avoid that and, like, trying to, like, preserve the happy, positive experience, because these people have already decided that they hate it, and they've decided to, like, ruin the experience for fans who want to, like, wait, you know? And so that's my harsher opinion on it, but I was not a fan of that, because I was like, we just want to be able to listen to it purely at midnight. We don't want to be, like, having to avoid all these things and, like, accidentally see something because you're just pushing it out because you need to, like, talk about how much you hate her, you know? Because none of what people were saying was really, like, around an actual, genuine, fair shake of the album, in my opinion.
Did you have any feelings about them choosing not to put a name on the article?
I think that's fine that they did that, because I do agree. Like, with the death threat stuff, that's crazy, and I do not understand why people insist upon doing that, or, like, the doxing and all of that. So I feel like, yeah, I think it was, like, a shitty article in terms of the review. I don't think it really dug down into any of it. And it was mostly, like, it sounded predetermined to me. Like, you decided that you hate everything she puts out, so you're going to say this review. But I think it was fine that they kept it anonymous, because I agree that, like, the doxing is kind of crazy. The, like, relentless threats are kind of crazy. And if you want to avoid that, sure. Because, like, I don't advocate for, like, any of that, or, like, the possibility of someone, like, getting hurt. And I feel like that's a real possibility with the way some Swifties were tweeting underneath that article. I was like, that's a lot to say.
Well,
on
that's
the internet.
Definitely true. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately, we've, like, normalized this in our society, which is really cool, by the way.
Yeah, you know? Love it.
But I also feel like there are a lot of publishers who are putting their names on something, even if they know what might be coming for them.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's also maybe a little bit of hypocrisy in not putting your name on it due to backlash, but also writing and intentionally controversial yes. article.
Right. I mean,
like, this isn't Reddit. This right. isn't Reddit. Right. It, you yeah, can't disguise your yeah. name.
Under I think a, that if like, it is, you know, if it is a, like, a legitimate magazine, I think that, you know, if you're going to write something that's intentionally inflammatory, like mm. Zach was saying, I think that you are inviting discourse. You're certainly not inviting death threats.
Right.
But I think you are inviting discourse. And I mm. think if people are willing to engage in that discourse, you know, with their own names behind their opinions, I think it's maybe the least to ask that a journalist does the same thing.
Sure.
You know, I think it's one thing to post, make a social media post anonymously with an opinion that may be controversial. I think that's totally fair, mm-hmm. obviously within the realm of appropriate commentary. But I think that, you know, if you're going to be a music reviewer, sure. I think you have to be willing to be unpopular sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, and I right. think that you should maybe be willing to stand behind your own work. Obviously, death threats and all of that are wildly right. not okay and inappropriate, but I'm not sure that the solution to that is mm. not choosing or not allowing people to right. have a public opinion behind their own names or voices.
Wow.
Right.
That was a really, that was an impressive, that's, you sounded really smart just there.
Annie is really smart.
that is a real, you know, you, I think you.
Why do you say that so sarcastically?
The way, everything like I say sounds like sarcasm. What is the problem with that?
You just sound shocked.
I think Ramal would agree that came off very sarcastically. That,
yeah, it did. You were like, wow, you're smart. Wow.
I'm just saying, you sounded really good there. You had like okay, a two, you had like good. A minute-long monologue, good. And it was really good.
It was good.
A minute-long monologue about the value of standing behind your own work. I think, you know, on
and
that...
And people might disagree, but that's okay. Yeah, you know,
I think
might, you know,
on that but, same subject, you know, obviously Taylor has far more protection than any random journalist is going to have, but Taylor is willing to put her name behind her own work, however right. unpopular it may be yeah. and however people may respond to it. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
and I think that if you are a writer and artist,
right.
even if you use a pseudonym, I think
True.
It should, I think it should be claimed. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think that's
okay.
a good point.
Oh.
Sorry. My last point I was just going to say was like, I fully agree with Annie with that. Like you guys have convinced me because I was thinking about the point someone made where they were like, anonymity allows you to be as vicious as you want without having to own any of it. And I think that's something really important to keep in mind with the article too, because it really did go in ways that, yeah, potentially mm-hmm. they wouldn't have had their name been attached to it. And that's important to consider mm-hmm. as well.
True.
I think you're right. I think there's no accountability if there's mm-hmm. no...
Right.
If you don't have to stand behind your own words,
right.
how can
right.
there be... How does it make you different than an internet troll?
That's yeah. what I said. It's not Reddit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Right. No, the entire internet is not Reddit. That would be really fun, wouldn't it? Okay. Hey, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, guys.
This is Karma is a Pod. Karma is a Pod.
Karma is a Pod.
A pod.
Karma is a Pod coming at you with some deep takes this time.
Some deep takes yeah. today, yeah.
Right. We're diving deep into that
stage. Bring
stage.
Out the good discussions here. We bring out
yes.
the good discussions here.
Yes.
We have all sorts of discussions. So tune in for us next time. We'll see
yep.
you soon.
See ya.